Case this morning is United States versus Gibson. Mr. Williams.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Mr. Daly. Steve Williams representing the defendant, Mr. Gibson. Your Honors, obviously the gist of our argument here is that the guideline sentencing as it pertains to crack cocaine is itself unreasonable. And as a consequence of that and the application of those guidelines to Mr. Gibson's sentence, this case should be remanded for new sentencing with those considerations in mind.
Mr. Williams, your argument's interesting in that it's asking us to do, it seems to me, is apply the notion of reasonableness, if you will, at the wholesale level, not the retail level, not defendant by defendant. But my problem with that is when you read the Supreme Court's remedial opinion in Booker, it does not read to me like an invitation for the courts to throw out whole sections of the guidelines as somehow per se unreasonable, not to mention statutes. But let's just stick with the guidelines for the moment. And so I'm concerned about our authority to do what it is you're asking us to do.
Well, Your Honor, I would have to agree. The Booker case certainly doesn't read as an invitation to do that. It's kind of hard to determine what the Booker case reads as an invitation to do. there are no invitations in Booker other than to apply the dictates of the sentencing statute, which requires the district courts take into account numerous considerations, many of which were not available for the courts to consider prior to Booker.
They all sound individualized to me. 3553A itself lists a whole bunch of very particular factors about an individual defendant. And if we were to do, as you argue, and you know, as you rightly say, there's a great deal of support out there, you know, in society and in the commission to address this issue. But we may not be the right people to do it. And I don't see how we can just say, well, you know, we've decided this guideline is inherently unreasonable or that guideline is inherently unreasonable. There's nothing particular about Mr. Gibson with respect to the crack powder distinction that wouldn't be equally said of everyone else, right?
That's absolutely true. In fact, in Mr. Gibson's case, I think we must rely on the notion that across the board, the guidelines provisions are unfair with respect to crack cocaine, because obviously there's aggravating factors, which the government has pointed out, that are relevant to Mr. Gibson's case. There may be some mitigating factors too, but I don't dispute those individualized aggravators are present. But I do think that the sentencing statute does address some things that the court must consider that do apply across the board. And most specifically, I believe it is 3553A6 that addresses the need to avoid unwarranted sentencing disparities. And
well,
I think
and you would like us to say disparities across the field of cocaine offenders, but the government's going to come back and say, no, it's disparities across the field of crack cocaine offenders. I mean, there's this level of generality issue here.
Certainly. And I think that some of the key language to look at is disparities among defendants who've committed similar offenses. And I guess that gets to the notion of, well, what does that mean? And does that mean that we can apply it to drugs that are similar? And in this case, those drugs that have the exact same chemical composition, as was discussed earlier, or does it have to be something that's categorically the same under the particular statute that is at issue? Are we dealing with, is it something that has to be categorically the same in that it has to be crack cocaine versus powder cocaine with respect to sentencing? And I think that one of the things that is important in addressing this is, of course, the Sentencing Commission itself has addressed this problem that we're concerned with. But,
you know, your argument is not limited to this. Suppose, for example, it were an 844 conviction, possession, and it were possession of marijuana, and this panel of judges, being the liberals that we all are, decided that no one should ever go to prison for marijuana. So we thought the only reasonable sentence for an 844 marijuana possession, no matter how many times you've done it or anything, was 0 months in prison and maybe 3 months of some form of probation. Well, that's not the judgment Congress has made. And so there's a problem with that, even if we're firmly convinced that it's an unreasonable thing to do.
I would have to agree with that, but I think that when you're talking about penalties for marijuana, first of all, in any given case, obviously, within the range established, there's going to have to be individualized determinations. And certainly with respect to the punishments that have been assigned, and I'm talking about maximum and minimum statutory punishments, those have been assigned by Congress. And I think the government's briefing touches on this. They liken the guidelines to these congressional determinations as well. But I think it's been made amply clear that that the guidelines are not something that is just Congress's determination. This is something that's been the subject of litigation. It's something that's been the subject of much discussion. There are that Sentencing Commission is at least nominally a part of the judicial branch. There are representatives that are part of the judicial branch, and the Sentencing Commission itself, in this case, has said our guidelines here, the ones that we've written, are not reasonable. Now, that's maybe taking a slight liberty, but I don't think so, because at the very least, they've been said they're unwarranted. And they've listed numerous reasons for that particular position that they've taken.
And but those guidelines and the distinctions that they make between crack cocaine and other forms of cocaine remain on the books. And I've been waiting to hear an answer from you to Judge Wood's very foundational question about what authority do we have to throw out the policy judgments made in the sentencing guidelines and in the statutes, the policy judgments of Congress, in the guise of engaging in a reasonableness review of a criminal sentence.
Well, I think
what is our authority to do that?
I think the authority is granted in Booker. The authority is, at this point in time now, the guidelines are one factor among many, and you have to look at the reasonableness of the sentence despite what the guidelines might say.
But you're asking us to lay down a categorical rule, not just to evaluate the reasonableness of this particular sentence, and I question our authority to do that under Booker's grant of reasonableness review to the courts.
Certainly, Booker isn't a specific invitation to do so, but it certainly also grants the authority to do so because the guidelines are advisory. And strangely, those who write them are saying that there's a problem with them. And so if there's an invitation out there, it's probably to anyone who's willing to listen. And in this particular case, the court does have the authority under the statute to look at what is a reasonable sentence, and you look at the disparities between crack cocaine and powder cocaine, and they're unreasonable. They're huge disparities, and they're not justified. And in taking all of those things into consideration, it is certainly within the court's power to look at the guidelines and say, are they reasonable? Are they reasonable in this particular case? Are they reasonable in any particular case as to this particular statute, this particular distinction, crack and powder distinction? And 3553A, I believe, grants the court that authority because those guidelines are just not binding any longer. Now, Congress may say otherwise later if the court were to take action, but right now, that is certainly the case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Mr. Daly?
Good morning, Your Honors. Thomas Daly from the United States Attorney's Office, Southern District of Illinois, on behalf of the United States. Mr. Williams, Your Honor, this case, I think, can, as you had indicated, your liberal judges, It's not that that is the issue. It's the issue of what is the law here, as you had pointed out in your questioning. And the law is clear that the guidelines are advisory from Booker. The law is also clear on the penalties that Congress imposed for the substance crack cocaine. This particular charge, 844A, has a penalty range for those who possess more than 5 grams from 5 to 20 years. The issue here and the request of the defendant is for a reduction downward from Judge Steele at the time of sentencing. That was some 20 months below the minimum range, which I believe was 92 to 115, the offense level being 23. This defendant having a criminal history category of 6.
But I do understand that he's not taking issue, at least I infer that, with the propriety of a sentence of 60 months. I mean, in other words, the statutory minimum stands as a 5-year statutory minimum because it was crack, and that's wholly beyond this court's authority. I mean, Booker doesn't do anything to that. And it wouldn't have been that if it had been powder, but nonetheless, he gets 108 months, not 60 months, which is a considerable difference. So he's I understand his argument. He's saying, in assessing the reasonableness of this 844A sentence, consistently with whatever the statutory minimum may be, we ought to take into account the irrationality of such a vast disparity between powder and crack.
That then raises the question of what one's opinion is, and of course this court has tremendous authority to provide guidance for those of us that practice under the laws of the United States. However, it is a situation here where we're dealing with what is reasonable, and of course that is what Booker tells us about. This court recently, and I may have trouble pronouncing it, but on July 7th in the M-Y-K-Y-T-I-U-K
case. I believe
case.
We're calling it Mekityuk.
All right.
Whatever. That may not be correct, but...
there also was raised not only the standard of reasonableness, but also the rebuttable presumption, which now would apply, because this came subsequent to our briefing here, but would apply to the Gibson case. There has been no rebuttable presumption made. The sentencing and the calculations of the guideline were rather simple. It was a simple possession case. The seriousness of it, though, and therefore the reasonableness of the assessment of and the sentencing of 108 months, then became the burden of the sentencing judge. And he then went through 3553A, in my counting through the sentencing transcript pages, I think it's 14 through 17 or 18, I counted roughly 18 or 19 references to 3553A. It's clear that this judge felt that this was reasonable. We had a defendant here with a criminal history going back to age 14 and running consistently in violation of the law through his date of sentencing, which I think at that time his age was 27. Clearly, the judge, in analyzing this, did so in a reasonable manner. He stated his reasons, I think, very, very succinctly in the record, as I'm sure your honors have read. So the issue then, getting back to one of your earlier questions, is this fair? There are judges, and I cited a district court case out of Nebraska, 8th District or 8th Circuit area, U.S. versus Tabor. That judge gave a very, very thorough analysis of the law, and he sentenced in that particular case under the crack guidelines. He indicated in his sentencing memorandum that he didn't care for what he had to do, but that that was the law, and that judges are not legislators, they are judges, and that Congress's determination of this penalty was based on sound reasoning that he felt was not improper reasoning, and due to that, it was his obligation to proceed, even though he stated openly that he had some disagreement. There have been other...
Well, let me just interject. I think the process question before us here really is as I said, in the end, it's kind of wholesale versus retail, is the way the guidelines themselves are changed and modified still the same way we've been living with for all these years since 1987 when the commission studies something, considers it, proposes whatever it's going to do, or are courts going to invalidate whole guidelines on the grounds of unreasonableness because of whatever, you know, maybe before a court? And obviously I understand the government's position to be that the guidelines themselves have a process for being changed and that 3553A and particular reasonableness determinations have to be made at the level of the individual defendant, if I'm not mistaken.
And that is, it is advisory now. If Judge Steele had felt that there was some reasonableness in the defendant's request for a 72-month sentence, I'm sure that he would have so stated and proceeded to sentence in that manner. However, he followed what is the law, and it was a reasonable sentence, and therefore to inject legislative changes, which would be perhaps what would happen if this court would remand the case for resentencing, would put him into a very difficult situation of what do I do? Do I follow the law? What is the law? Of course, you would be telling him what to do, but that then would create terrific problems in sentencing. In the Booker case itself, it talks about the guidelines are still to be given advisory, but thorough analysis in sentencing processing as judges are encountered with defendants, and such as this case, a crack cocaine case.
Are you aware of any cases other than this United States versus Smith case where a district court essentially adopted the argument being made by the defendant in this case that the justification for the disparity in the guidelines for sentences for cocaine and crack cocaine do not justify or are not justified and therefore sentenced under the guidelines? And if you are aware of any such case, are you aware of any appeals? That case, apparently the appeal was dismissed.
I'm not sure, because there is reference made in the government's brief about the status of whether or not that will be appealed. I think the department, I don't know at this moment, Your Honor, whether or not the department will authorize appealing Smith. I would, though, indicate to the court that somewhat along the same line, I'm not aware, if to answer your direct question, I'm not aware of any other cases of that nature. But referring back to the Tabor case, the judge in that instance cited, I think, a very, very position of compassion towards this whole issue of, as it's argued, disparity in the 1,000 or 100 to the 1 ratio. However, he left it up to, as I think he's quoted, or I can quote from him, the courts are not legislators or theologians. The courts are to be bound by the law. And even though he's addressing the same matter as is addressed by the judge in the Eastern District of Wisconsin in the Smith case, once again, we get back to the point of what is the law and what is reasonable. And in this instance, going back to our particular case here, Judge Steele did a reasonable sentencing. He had valid reasons, as stated in the record, for what he did in assessing and then sentencing. If there'd be other questions, I see my time's running short. I'd be happy to answer. If not, I would ask for affirmation of the sentencing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Daly. Mr. Williams, you have 1 minute with me.
Your Honors, first I'd like to just answer a question that the court posed. I believe there are at least three other courts that have adopted the reasoning of Smith. United States versus Harris, which was a D.C. District Court on March 7, 2005. United States versus Castillo, a Southern District of New York court, May 20th of 2005. And Simon versus United States. And I believe I cited to that and I can't tell you right off the top of my head, Your Honor, what the district was on that particular case. I apologize, but I do believe those are at least three other courts that have adopted that.
Eastern District, is it this one in your reply brief, Eastern District of New York?
That's the correct one, yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
And you're unaware of the appeal status of those?
I am unaware of the appeal status of those cases. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.